Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of the Nui Tech People podcast. On today's episode, we have Jonathan Milgate for his second version on the Nui Tech People podcast. Last time we spoke to Jonathan was over 2 years ago, and in that time, he's gone on to become the CTO of ASX-listed company Camplify. Really interested to hear about his journey. Welcome to another episode of the Nui Tech People podcast. This time, our second time for a returning guest, Jonathan Milgate. He is now CTO at Camplify. It's probably one of my favorite type of interviews. Revisiting, we had a chat three and a half years ago. And you were software development manager at Andeity.
Head of development operations, yeah. So a DevOps sort of development role, yeah.
Yeah, and now progressing to a CTO role.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's really nice to see that growth for individuals within the Newcastle tech scene. I don't think that sort of growth was there prior to 3 years ago, that, you know, to grow with a startup, to go from that role, going to a startup, that startup going from a small team into an IPO late last year. Pretty amazing journey.
Yeah, I think Newcastle has changed a lot in the last few years. There's a lot more tech going on, or maybe there always was and we just didn't see it. It didn't sort of bubble to the surface, but there's definitely a lot happening at the moment.
Yeah, and for those that haven't caught the original episode, don't know who you are, obviously CTO Camplify.
Yeah, so I think as James mentioned, was head of development operations at Andeity, doing that was one of my first management or leadership roles outside of being an individual contributor, and now moving on to CTO or CTO of a really small team at a very small startup. Initially 3 years ago, it was I think three of us, a couple of developers and myself, and we had a chief product officer at the time, just trying to make what we could with what we've got. And now we've grown, as you said, we're publicly listed at the end of last financial year, and now bigger and better, taking over the world. We're listed in four countries: Australia, New Zealand, Spain, and the UK. You can rent vans from us in any of those countries. And yeah, a team of, I think, 15 now. So it's up and up in the last few years.
Yeah, it's a crazy journey. And as I said, really, I guess it's heartwarming for me to see that growth in not only Newcastle tech scene, but individuals within that scene and the opportunities that have arisen for people like yourself.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot's happened, right? The first time I heard of Camplify was actually at one of the Nui Tech startup events, and Justin, our CEO, was presenting and saying, "We've just gone through this accelerator, and now we need to find a CTO." And I was at that event, and I was a DevOps engineer at the time. And I was thinking, "That's what I want to do. I want to be the CTO of this sort of a company." And then, you know, 4 or 5 years later, now here I am. I mean, it was a bit of a journey, but I wouldn't have expected 5 years ago that even this sort of thing would have happened in Newcastle.
No, I completely agree. You mentioned that journey.
Sure.
What was Camplify's tech team like when you joined there?
It was really interesting. We just sort of moved from offshoring. So initially, Camplify was kind of a WordPress site where we're just testing and how can we get hirers and owners and is this a real thing, you know, doing some lean testing. And then it was offshored to Nepal where we had a team of developers over there with a manager over there managing it sort of all offshored and outsourced. We brought one of those developers out to Australia and he's still in the team now. Yeah. He's actually just gone back to Nepal first time since the COVID, since the lockdown. So he's back there a couple of days ago. But that's grown. We brought in a team lead, essentially a guy that's now our technical lead. He knows the product inside and out. He rewrote a lot of it in Ruby on Rails and made it what it is today. We had him and Bibek from overseas and a couple of other guys just kind of running the show at a really small, very, very lean. And we've just grown out since then as the platform's become more popular.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You'll go into that little team part for a second there.
Growing a tech team from, let's call it a team of four, CPO, CTO, lead dev, technical architect, right, and another dev.
Yep.
How did that team grow from there? What's the next steps from that? Is it hiring more engineers? Is it hiring into that infrastructure space? Is it hiring some support? What was your journey?
So when we started, we still had some engineers in Nepal who the infrastructure was already set that was okay for us for the short term. It was reasonably well automated. We had some issues that didn't scale that well, but with the size we were, it was fine. So the goal was really to bring in more developers and build a local team. I really wanted to build a local collaborative culture in Newcastle. We're a proudly Newcastle company. We love being here. Our headquarters, as far as I know, will always be in Newcastle. So we wanted to do something around that. So bringing in more engineers and more engineers. We had a technical lead. We had guys from some other guys that had a lot of experience, so we could bring in juniors. We brought in someone from uni. We brought some people who didn't have any experience. We took some risks on some people, international people, bringing them in. Just growing out any way we could. The Newcastle tech scene is growing, but it's vicious. That's probably not the right word, but there's a lot of demand, high demand for software development. So I had to explore different angles and really try to build a reason for you to want to work at Camplify, not just build a tech team.
Yeah, cool. I'm gonna dig into one little part there. Building software engineering team, right?
Yep.
Challenge across the country at the moment. Mm-hmm. Challenge internationally at the moment. Yeah, challenge definitely within Australia. Lack of software engineering talent for the amount of roles available. Mm-hmm. Building an engineering team, hiring mid to senior level engineers that can come in, hit the ground running, probably ideal for everyone.
Sure.
But you nearly can't do it within any sort of budget these days. You've mentioned hired seniors and then juniors to build them up.
Yep.
That's the way I encourage teams to build at the moment. Mm-hmm. You talk about that experience there, your experience going with that. It's not easy to do, but I think it's probably definitely the most economical way to build a team.
I think that's the key to do it. You can't just bring in juniors all the time. That's the gap where I think there is. There's definitely a desire and a need for mid to senior level engineers, but there are a lot of junior engineers available. The problem is you need to help them. You need to hold their hand and get them up to speed. Most of them will come up to speed quite quickly if you've got the right culture. So for us, it was obviously pinning ourselves around the technical leads and getting some of those things sorted, getting our culture sorted, getting our practices sorted, and bringing in engineers from underneath. I don't think many people in my team, we're still Ruby on Rails in the back end. I don't think many people in my team were Ruby on Rails engineers before they started here. Yeah. And they've come across and have enjoyed it and learnt it and now stay with us and do it.
And you've kept your seniors, your technical leads on board as well, created opportunities for them as well.
Yep, so that's the other thing. You bring in someone day one or really, really early to be a technical lead. They're doing everything. They're writing every single piece of code. They're building all the infrastructure. How do you then keep that person engaged as your team grows and their requirements? They maybe don't need to be across everything, but they need to have the T-shape, be really across a lot of things, but then have a depth of knowledge in one particular area. And that's kind of how I've grown out the team, or tried to grow out the team, based on who I could find and the needs of what we're trying to build.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's personally, I think that's the best way to build an engineering team at the moment. A really good seniors, people that can help, as you said, set the practices in place.
That's right.
And then mentor the juniors up.
And bring people up. And as you bring people up, if the seniors get bored or they want a different challenge and can find something else, there's a lot out there. You have to support them and say, thanks, we've done a great job. No hard feelings. If you need to go and move on to the next stage of your life, we're not providing what you need. You've got to allow them to do that and bring other people up behind them.
Yeah, nice. All right, we'll talk about the team building. That you've obviously gone on your own journey. You started many years ago, more technical role, mm-hmm. then move into a DevOps operational type role, and now into that CTO role.
You make it sound like it was overnight.
Yeah.
It was such a long journey. It really was. I think at the night where, as I said, I saw Justin present what Camplify was, and that really solidified for me what I wanted to do and how I wanted to get there and that it was a thing. You know, I was thinking, I was in a DevOps role, I was kind of leaning away from more technical work. I was doing some AWS training and thinking, all right, I'm going to do some certification here, learn more about AWS, and we were going down the Puppet and Chef routes and all this infrastructure automation, and my heart just wasn't in it anymore. I couldn't find myself, I couldn't encourage myself to study it enough. And then we started talking about teams and structures, and DevOps came along, and it was breaking down the barriers between Dev and Ops, and how does that work, and how do cross-functional teams work, and that I became super passionate about. I really enjoyed how that worked, so I found that much easier to educate about and to learn more about and immerse myself in that world. So I guess from there, I'm a pretty determined person. I decided this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do everything to in my power to make sure it happens. So, you know, enrolled in university to do a master's degree and a boring old MBA, but that gives you the breadth of knowledge that I thought I would need as a leader. And really focus on things like leadership and follow the local tech startup scenes, because those are the guys doing it, doing really interesting things, still being hands-on, but requiring that entrepreneurship. So my journey has been pretty long. And since then, I haven't stopped. I finished my MBA a year or so ago. I've done some courses with MIT to try and do more about design thinking and ideation and more about product side. So I'm learning and growing every day as a person myself. And Camplify is driving me to do that. Well, I need to do it as a startup. We've got to do everything. But I'm really enjoying that. And I miss the individual contributor a bit here and there. It's nice to, you know, I've written this bit of code, I've written this feature, and now it's out in public, people are using it. But at the same time, you know, I was at the pub the other day, I was actually literally wearing this shirt, and the girl behind the counter is pouring me a beer, and she said, "Do you work for Camplify?" And I'm like, "Yeah." She goes, "Oh, we've got a van on the site. We love it. We love the app. We love how it works. Great work." And I was like, "Oh, that's, you know, I did that."
Yeah, beautiful.
Not really, but, you know, I had a part in it, so.
Yeah, nice. Sounds like passion was the big part, I guess.
Yeah,
as
massively.
People come up that tech route, you can decide to say super technical. People are passionate about saying technical, but you can still earn a lot of money.
Yeah,
very senior roles, technical, especially these days, you can be you know, senior tech role.
Earn more than the CTO of a startup, yep.
you can definitely do that, or you go that people route. It sounds like passion probably passion and where you found yourself.
Yeah, I didn't try and kid myself anymore and say, this is what I really want to do and this is what I'm interested in. And that made it easier to work on. But as you've said, there's plenty of routes now. And if I think in the past, it was always, this is, if you're a tech person, this is your career. You know, you start as a junior, mid, senior, then you manage a team. But that's not necessarily the best thing to do. And if you're the best technical person in your team, then maybe you shouldn't be a manager, because being the best technical person in the team delivering tech is so important to the business that if you take that person out, you have to refill that position, or you have to sort of fill that gap. They may not want that. They may, you know, we're sort of all conditioned to think that management is the goal, but it's really not. And I think that's tipping. So definitely you see now there's lots of...
there's technical lead roles paying $200,000-$300,000, right. Especially in the US. Those roles in Australia are starting...
They're coming up, yeah. There's lots of security roles around there for the same sort of thing. You're still really hands-on, still doing things, getting paid big bucks, getting enjoyment out of it, and still being hands-on technical. I think that's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't think people management's the be-all and end-all. And if that's not your jam and you don't want to do
It's definitely not for everybody. It's a lot of work, and it's... Coming from an individual contributor to a management role, you notice the differences there. Like when you're an individual contributor, you're judged, or you can get satisfaction out of delivering a thing. Like, I did this thing. Whereas a manager, it's sort of about how quickly is my team going? How is my team working? And there's a lot of people problems there. You know, there's emotions, there's motivations, and if you're not interested in that sort of thing, you're gonna really struggle with it.
Yeah, I got two different ways. So I'll start with I'll start with the challenge. What's the biggest challenge that you've experienced going down this route and going from, I guess, technical route to CTO?
That's probably one of the biggest ones, is that going from individual contributor to manager to, like, I still find myself most days writing some SQL or pulling some reports and getting my hands dirty and going, oh, yeah, great, I got that. I did that. I can still do it. I've still got some kicks, but not really. The biggest challenges right now is hiring and getting the right people and keeping them involved, keeping the culture and keeping them engaged. The last 2 years have been really tough on everybody, but technical teams, I think it's been assumed that you can just work remotely, which for most part you can, but if you're a highly collaborative team, that's a big change from working as a group in a building to working as a group remotely. So that's been a really interesting challenge to try and solve.
Yeah, I think it's a challenge for a lot of companies. I think remote's a thing.
Yep.
I feel like remote will stay in some form.
It's definitely not going away.
Hybrid will stay in some form. I feel like a lot of companies were forced into fully remote because of COVID, didn't have the practices in place, have been reverse engineering them over 2 years to try to build them in place. Some companies have got there, some companies don't. Yeah. The companies that have got there built those practices in place, culture, how to build culture remotely, how to communicate, how to collaborate remotely. Like if you built that on the fly and you're there, you can run fully remotely, but A lot of companies forced into it without having
that. So I'll admit we weren't there when we started. I built a collaborative, locally collaborative team. We loved whiteboarding sessions. Every day we'd play board games at lunch and go to the pub for lunch. And our team was really built around this collaboration and a group of people who want to work together. We started, luckily for us, some of the age of our teams and myself included, you know, there's people with children and there's people with outside of work commitments. So we introduced some practices like if someone's working from home, if they're remote, then everybody acts like they're remote. Mm-hmm. If you've ever been in a meeting where it's four people in a room and one person remote, you know how excluded you can feel. So we basically said, you know, if you're in front of a laptop and there's some person remote, is maximum of two around a laptop unless you've got a nice setup like this. So we started implementing those just before. We also had some rules around a couple of the members in our team have kids they need to pick up in the afternoon. So we'd limit when meetings can start and end in the afternoon. So, you know, 2:30, people got to go pick up kids. So we don't have meetings during those times. And that, I think that sort of cultural thing helped us grow the teams in more diverse ways than others have. But then, so at the start of COVID, we didn't really have a lot of those good practices. We had some and we'd been dabbling with it, but COVID forced it down your throat. You know, we all, one day, I know I hired a guy, the next day we were all told we had to go home. So he'd never done any of that stuff with us. We hadn't generated any of the social collateral that everybody else had. So we had to really work to make sure that the new people understood our culture and understood how we kind of interacted with each other and how we worked. You know, we're heavy users of Slack, heavy users of Jira and Zoom meetings, all those sorts of things we had to build in and drive that kind of culture online. We tried to pick up what we were doing in the office and make it more remote, which worked to a degree, but then we had to change some things so it would work a bit better remotely. And now we're coming into this hybrid environment where, you know, we've got this really nice new office. People come in more so for collaboration than anything else. Or, you know, because we've got a good air conditioning and it's hot outside sometimes. But given the last 2 years, there's quite a few people who don't, you know, who potentially have gotten lonely. You know, lots of single people living in an apartment in the middle of the city, and you've not been able to go out and do anything for the last 2 years. So come in and collaborate and get some social interaction as well. We've got a great ping pong table. We've now got the kegerator and the Street Fighter machine. We find a lot of people are coming in to hang out and get some social collateral back and then work more collaborative remotely even.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, as you said, you know, having an office there for people to come can tick the box for those people that
maybe don't have that's right. It facilitates some social interaction that I think is really important for collaborative development teams. If you're not working together, you know, individual contributors, you're delivering things, but you're going to get a better product, especially a better product if you're working with designers and QA, if you're all working together trying to define solutions rather than working as individuals.
Yeah, I agree. And you can work together remotely. It just depends on, you know, whether
how that works, yeah. You've got to have a good setup.
And who those individuals are.
That's right.
I feel like in the future, and it might be 3 to 5 years from now, you'll get people that want to work remotely and they'll look for remote-first companies or remote-only companies. And you'll get people that want to work hybrid or want to work.
I think we're already seeing hybrid.
I don't think we'll go back to fully in the office.
I doubt for anyone. I doubt you'll ever see 5 days full-time in this industry, at least. There'll be some industries where that has to happen for reasons. But I doubt in our industry you'll see a role that enforces you to be in the office 5 days a week, maybe a security or a high level, you know.
Good luck recruiting that role.
And you're going to struggle, right, because people don't want it. Maybe, there'll be some people who do want it. They want to separate their work and life, and that's the easy way to do it. You know, most people don't have a separate location in their house to work. So for me, I don't. I've got a little study, and that's if I'm playing online games with my friends, that's where I play and that's where I work now. So separating those two things was really hard over COVID. And I had to sort of stop doing some occasionally to try and get that work-life balance back, not being in the same room constantly. But yeah, in the future, I see full remote, definitely 100%. It's really interesting to see the big players in Silicon Valley now saying if you're located in the Valley area, you need to be in the office 3 days a week. And the kickback from that is not surprising. You also see, you know, 2 years ago, lots of organizations said you never need to be in the office again. So lots of people have moved out. People don't want to live in big cities if they don't have to. I don't want to. That's why I live in Newcastle. I know people have gone out rural. You know, they've got the tree change. And now you're saying they need to be back in the office again. I think you're going to be surprised what will happen there, or maybe not surprised.
I don't think you'll be surprised. Yeah. And those people just look for fully remote roles. And
they'll just look for fully remote roles. Yeah.
Yeah. Mate, we talked about the challenger. You also mentioned that people desire and the growth that you've gone on. MBA is a interesting topic.
Yes, definitely. It's a bit of a contentious topic sometimes.
Yeah, I've not done one myself. I've heard different, various opinions on it, but can get your experience.
Sure. Well, I guess, so for me, it made a lot of sense, personally. I wouldn't recommend it for everybody. But for me, it made a lot of sense because one, I was an individual contributor, as I've said many times. I was being a DevOps engineer. I was in a technical team, being really technical. And I wanted to prove to myself and to others that what I want to do and what I can do and what I'm good at would be these sort of management leadership roles. There were things I needed to learn and things I needed to focus on. But because it's such a wide area, where do I start? The best thing for me was to pick this to do an MBA, to do something that's really broad and not focus on a particular area, because there's a lot of those masters in IT kind of degrees, and that's not what I wanted. I wanted to focus on business, economics, accounting, HR, organizational psychology, those sorts of things that I focused on. And the main reason that I chose an MBA university degree is because for me, I need the goal. I need that end goal to say, you've got an assignment due next week. You've got an exam due at the end of the month.
Yeah.
You've got 2 years left to do this thing and you'll have this piece of paper. So for me, I needed that end goal. I needed something to focus on, to drive towards. If you're not driven by that, if you're more interested in just, and you can enforce yourself to learn it other ways, then by all means, go and do that. You don't need to do a degree. You don't need to rack up all of the help that I have. You definitely don't need to do that. For me, it facilitated those things. And I mean, writing a prospectus for Camplify when we went live, it was nice to be able to say on there that I had a master's degree, you know, an MBA.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think also being the CTO of a listed company now, having that behind you.
It's definitely helped facilitate some conversations around, you know, we've built invoicing systems. We talk about accounting a lot because we've got a two-sided economy. You know, we've got owners and hirers. Most off-the-shelf software doesn't cater for that. It's one way or the other. So being able to understand some, you know, being able to read a P&L, being able to read ledgers and understanding the logic and the conversation there has really helped.
Yeah, yeah, cool. The experience actually going through the MBA whilst working full-time. I've heard
it's a lot of work.
Been referred to as the divorce course.
Well, I took my time.
Yeah.
I initially was doing two subjects a semester.
Yeah.
And then I went back to one subject a semester as I kind of moved into that space. And I secured the first role as a software delivery manager.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I don't need to prove to the world anymore or myself. I know I'm doing this and I know I can do this. Yeah. What I need to do now is just learn. So rather than forcing myself to get through it quickly, I took my time and really learned and sat down and went, okay, what am I trying to learn here? What am I actually absorbing and what am I not? How do I best learn this stuff?
Yeah,
so I took my time. But yes, if you power through it just to get that piece of paper at the end, you're probably doing it for the wrong reasons. But also, yeah, it's a lot of work. It's every night, every weekend. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah. But you feel like it's been a positive. If you had 100%. Your time over again,
definitely.
You'd be doing it again.
I would do it again, yeah.
Cool. You've mentioned after that, continual learning again. Yep. You've done some training through MIT.
Yeah.
Reasons behind that is just that continual growth into that people management, into going from a technical role to being that CTO of a listed company.
I think so, yeah. So being the CTO of a public listed company is quite daunting. You know, there's a lot to do. There's a lot of people out there who are more experienced than I am. We have helped bring this company up, but it's not something I've ever done before. There's things I'm missing. There's things, like, I don't know everything. And having a very strong technical background, I wanted to get more of a product-based background, more user experience focused. So doing design thinking and ideation sessions with MIT was, I think that's probably why I've gone in that direction. And of course, it doesn't hurt that, you know, you can tick that box that says, yeah, I've studied at MIT.
Yeah.
But that was more of a kind of a nice win on the side. It was really more about focusing on what can I learn out of this? What don't I have a good basis in? And design thinking is something that I think is super important to us, especially to a company like Camplify, and something that will help me moving forward, really focusing on the user.
Yeah, I agree. I also think it's the beauty of the world we're living in at the moment. For somebody who's living in Newcastle,
yeah,
to have access to a course run out of MIT,
yeah.
I think there's, you know, I know Harvard does courses online. Yeah, they do online.
The same, yeah.
Access to those, yeah, you know, I guess the lecturers are the highest level. It's just, it's a thing of beauty that well, we can have access
yeah,
to.
Yeah, it wasn't just the lecturers. Lecturers were really good. We had people come in who spoke about how they do ideation at Lego and at big companies like GM and Ford. And we did some group works. And I think some of my group had people from AT&T, from Microsoft, from really large companies in the US. And I mean, I was working at 2 a.m. with them, but it was worth it. It's only a short course, so it was worth it to interact with those sorts of people and get different perspectives on how things work. It was very different from, you know, three or four people living and working in the US across the US and someone in Australia. It's quite an interesting course.
Yeah, nice. I feel like that networking part, you've always been a big supporter of networking being positive for your career. I know, as you mentioned, Nui Startups many years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah.
Networking, conferencing, you've been involved with DevOps Days.
2018, yeah. That was the last time we spoke. I'd just about to launch DevOps Days. Well, I think we'd launched it. We were just about to host DevOps Days 2018.
2018,
yeah.
Feels like.
Yeah, it's a million years ago, right? It's a long time ago.
Mate, what's your biggest, I guess, takeaway on networking? Is it, you know, career-wise?
That's a tricky one, hey. It works. As much as people don't like it, and it's a very old school way of doing things. We've got a really great community here in Newcastle around this Slack channel, Nui, and around some of the meetups that we're doing. And it's highly collaborative. There's a lot of people there that just want to hang out and talk shop with each other. I think what we want to foster that and grow that, and it's a really nice way to kind of build a community around what we do as people rather than, you know, who we are.
Yeah, networking has definitely taken a hit over the past 2 years. Yeah. I feel like many people spend so many hours on Zoom through the day. You get that Zoom fatigue. Oh, yeah, you come definitely. 5 p.m., 5:30, the traditional time for a networking group or a meetup.
Mm.
And people don't want to sit in front of their computer at that
That's
time.
The thing,
That's
right?
why there's potential dinners with families or kids or just plain Zoom fatigue.
Yep.
Housemates coming home.
It's about that work-life balance, you know. Yeah. You spend all day in Zoom meetings. The last thing you want to do is another Zoom meeting.
Yeah, correct. So I feel like that's taken a big hit. And mm-hmm. there's potential now as we move sort of post-pandemic. I don't know if we're exactly post-pandemic yet.
Is there ever going to be a post?
But there's definitely an openness to that face-to-face again. Is that is that what you've seen? Is that what you're hoping for?
We've definitely seen it. You know, we've been doing a lot of engagement sort of activities in the Camplify office recently. It was Harmony Day Monday. And we had everyone bring platters from you know, traditional things that they would normally eat and share. And it was great. A couple of weeks ago, we had Pancake Day. We had the CEO and the CFO cooking his pancakes on the barbecue. And we had almost the entire organization in the building. It was great to have everybody back and doing being collaborative in the office again. But it's interesting to see, like you said, the hybrid model is probably the majority model. So if you look at the bell curve, you'll have people who want to work fully remote, people who want to work fully in an office, but the majority of people will want a few days in and out of the office, mm-hmm. I think. That's kind of what we're seeing. It's still early days. What we have seen, though, is that the meetups are coming back. They're getting good attendances. They're getting 20, 30 people each time. We've done some surveys around to see what people are interested in, what they want to do. There's talks of different sorts of meetings or conferences or, you know, you can see concerts coming back. There's a Listen Out was on last weekend and a few thousand people there. People want to get out and experience things together again. So I guess on the back of that, we're looking at doing another conference like we did in DevOps Days, for DevOps Days in 2018. We've been trying to run it every year since, but something's got in the way.
Yeah, I know you and I have discussed this for probably 3 years in a row on
what can we do
for a large-scale tech conference in Newcastle. Yep. I think there's multiple benefits. There's potential bringing people to the area, but also being able to bring some high-level speakers to Newcastle for the local community.
That's the plan. So that's what we tried to do last time. I think DevOps Days was more of an excuse for the organizers to bring something to us that we wanted to see. Normally we'd have to go to Sydney or Brisbane or overseas to have the experience that we wanted to have. So we thought, let's try and bring this to Newcastle. And that's what we're trying to attempt again. You have a really great international speaker who's sort of tech adjacent, who can talk to us about maybe building teams or culture or diversity, these really key issues that are not necessarily tech only, but they're required or they're important for tech teams. Internationally renowned, hopefully someone will come in, we'll be able to find someone and bring them in, and then have the local tech scene sort of show its worth. So this is what someone here is doing. There's people here working from Atlassian for GitHub or for GitLab, and some of the big players are working in Newcastle. What are you doing? Do you want to come and talk to us about how that business works or how you work remotely or what does remote work look like for you? And then pure technical sessions as well. This is how you do X with Python. This is how you do some security thing, and have like try and run that full gamut for everybody.
In a perfect world, that runs 2022.
That runs this year. We've kicked it off. I've got a good group of organizers working with me to try and do something. We're picking early September for that to be a thing. And now I'm canvassing local businesses and seeing who might be interested. And if they are, what would you like it to look like? What would it take for you to send people to this thing?
Yeah.
So we're very, very early days, but we're pretty confident that it'll be a thing, and it'll be an in-person conference only. We've attempted some things with remote. We will record the sessions and show them later based on being allowed to, especially for international speakers. But it will be full in person to try and get this community back. People, I think, are pretty keen now to hang out and talk shop and you know, be with each other and socialize. And this is hopefully a great opportunity for us to do that.
I think it's a really exciting opportunity for Newcastle technology community. As you said, the meetup scene's been, it's had a troubling couple of years just because of COVID.
Yeah, it's been rough.
And it's been everywhere, right? This is not Newcastle specific. No. So I think it'd be super exciting. I think if people are keen or if they've got some ideas around a Newcastle technology conference, is it best to email you?
You can probably get me on LinkedIn, or if you're on the Newey Slack group, you can get me on there, or if you're not, you should be. Then jump on there and you can always DM me on there. But if you're interested in helping out or doing whatever, let me know. I'm also really interested to see what you might want to see at this sort of a conference. Like, what would you like it to be? How can we cater it for you? Because at the end of the day, I want you to come, and we want everybody to hang out together and socialize there as well, and make it I'd love to make it an annual thing and try and make it part of what is Newcastle now.
Yeah, I think it just brings that Newcastle technology community together. As you said, many people are now living in Newcastle, working fully remote, or working for international or Sydney-based or Melbourne-based companies. So they're working fully remote, living in Newcastle. What can they see by interacting with others? What can they bring to the table or help?
What conversations can you have? Like, what constraints do you have? What are your biggest challenges? Maybe we can help you out that way, or we can share experiences that improves everybody.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be great for the Newcastle technology community.
Yeah, I hope so. Fingers crossed. Long way to go, though. Lots to do.
These things don't come about by themselves.
No, right? They don't. And the previous time we had a great team, everybody working really hard towards the end there. We ended up with 182 people, I think, attending over the 2 days, which is fantastic for Newcastle. We're going to try and get more than that this time. I won't say numbers. Some people have thrown out some pretty big numbers there, and it'd be amazing if we could get those. But yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. It's still very early days.
Yeah, cool. The other point, obviously, that growth from, where you've gone from to CTO, if people are keen to sort of pick your brain on that experience or your experience going, through that technology career, LinkedIn, Newey Slack channel again.
Yeah, that's the best. Look, I don't think there's a silver bullet for it. Like, I don't really believe in luck, but I worked really hard to make sure I was in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it's about. I'm very determined, so decided this is what I wanted to do and drove everything towards what I wanted to do. But I'm more than happy to help out and to talk to anyone about it. That's essentially what my one-on-ones with my team are each month is, how are you doing? Where do you want to go? How can I help you get to where you want to be whilst, you know, helping Camplify get to where it wants to be?
Yeah. From my perspective, from an outsider's perspective, watching your career, I think that you knowing what you wanted and being passionate about that, it's a much easier for you to put in the hours, go the extra yards, push yourself in your own knowledge when you're passionate about an area. Yeah, trying to fit a square peg in a round hole because somebody tells you that's the career path you should take or that's where you might earn the most amount of money.
It's if you're out for the dollar, then you know I think you're doing the wrong thing. If you can, you know, we're so lucky at the moment that especially in tech, if you're passionate about something in particular, you can be super successful in it,
regardless of what it is.
There's so many opportunities out there.
Yeah, I completely agree, mate. Thanks for coming on for our second time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
3 years. Yeah, right. 3 years and it's been nice, as I said.
Should we schedule in another 3 years from now?
Hopefully we're still both around. mate, I appreciate the opportunity to have a chat again. And really, it's great from a Newcastle technology perspective to see somebody who started their career technically here and then have grown to an opportunity of a ASX listed company, CTO.
Oh, look, thank you for hosting this stuff and helping the community grow. I think it's been great. I can't wait to see you at the conference this year.
We'll be there for sure. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New in Tech People. To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes, and past episodes, please visit www.newintechpeople.com.au. Thank you.